Chazorshim sechs bekam perek ches mishne zayin until perek yud mishne zayin. After spending a perek telling us all the different payments which one needs to pay if he injures someone else, the Mishnah at the end of the perek tells us that just paying is not enough, because in order to get a proper forgiveness, you have to actually ask the person who you injured for forgiveness. And we learn this out of Avimelech asking Avram for forgiveness after he took Sarah as a sort of wife for himself. When he gave Sarah back, he also asked Avram for forgiveness. And in fact, we also learn from there that the person who was injured should forgive him. He shouldn't be cruel and say, oh, I'm not going to forgive you. He should forgive him just like Avram forgave Avimelech, because the pasuk says that Avraham davened for Avimelech. It doesn't mention that he forgave him. And the reason for that is because it's obvious that he forgave him, because it's an obligation to forgive him. And we see from there that it's an obligation for everyone to forgive the person who asked them for forgiveness. The Mishnah then told us that if someone tells someone else to injure him or to damage his property, we assume that he's not being serious, and therefore if the person does go ahead and actually does do the damage, he'll be chayev because he shouldn't have taken him seriously. However, when it comes to damaging his property, if he asks, really, you actually mean I should damage you and I'll be potter? If that person says yes, then the person who does the damage will be exempt because that was the condition. And in that case, we assume he's being serious, as long as it doesn't involve harming himself, just his property. Nevertheless, if you tell someone to injure someone else or to damage someone else, then even if you say he should be potter for it, then of course the person who does the damage will be chayev, and it's not the person who told him to do the damage, because ein shliach lidvar aveira, which means that a messenger who sins on behalf of someone else is chayev himself. He shouldn't have listened to him, and therefore the person who does the action, who does the sin, in this case the damage, he is the one who is chayev. The last two prokim discuss the laws of a gazlan, who is someone who steals forcefully, or maybe steals but not in a secret way, because that's a ganav. So firstly, of course, if you steal something forcefully, then you have to return the item. However, if the item has undergone an irreversible change, then the gazlan acquires the item, and therefore instead of paying back the actual item, he pays back the value, and specifically the value which it was worth at the time of stealing. And then the mission discussed a few examples of what's considered a real change. So if you steal an animal and then it gives birth, or then you shear the animal, so the actual animal hasn't changed, therefore you give back the actual animal, but what about the new child which was born and the shearings, the sheep shearings? So those have undergone a change, and therefore you pay the value of those, and again, specifically the value which they were worth at the time that you stole it. So not the value of the new animal, but the value of the fetus which was inside the mother animal. Okay, if you steal servants or animals and the age, that in itself is an irreversible change. However, contrary to Meir, even though that is a change, when it comes to a servant, servants have the same status as land. And like we've learned later on in the Mishnayos, even if you steal land, you can't acquire the land. And therefore, just like with land, you would give back the actual land and not the value. So when it comes to a servant, you give back the actual servant and not the value. Okay, other examples of a proper change is if a coin cracks, if you steal fruit and the fruit rot, or you steal wine and it goes sour, it turns into vinegar. Again, these are all considered proper changes. But if the change is unrecognizable, even though it might be a big change, then that's not considered a significant enough change, and therefore you would pay back the actual item. And what examples are those? For example, a coin which becomes invalidated in that region only. Or if truma food, which is the food which Kohanim get, if that becomes tome, you now can't eat it, you have to burn it, but the actual food hasn't changed. Or if you steal chometz and you own it during Pesach, again, that has to be destroyed, but the actual food has not changed. Or if you steal an animal and it's used for avodah zarah, for idolatry, or it has relations with a man or a woman, or it develops a blemish, which means that it can no longer be bought as a korban, or it's sentenced to death for killing someone, since these are not recognizable changes, so you return the actual thing that you stole. The Mishnah then went on to discuss three different workers who are paid to do a job, but they mess up. Now, one, if a craftsman breaks something, instead of improving it, they break it, so they need to pay back the value of the thing which they broke. But whereas a thief pays the value that it was worth at the time that he stole it, that's because a thief intends to acquire it. Here, the craftsman never intended to acquire it, he was going to give it back, and therefore he has to pay the value that it was worth at the time that it broke, because it still belonged to the owner at that time. So he broke something belonging to the owner then, and therefore he has to pay the value that it was worth at that time. Number two, a builder, if he accepts the job to take down a wall, that doesn't include damaging the wall or damaging the stones, and therefore if he does do damage to the stones or to someone during the process, then he's chayav to pay for it. And thirdly and finally, we had a dyer. If you give someone wool to dye, but he keeps it in his sort of cauldron machine for too long, and therefore it burns, so he basically ruined your thing, and therefore he's chayav to pay for it. Now, what happens if he does the job, but he uses very bad quality dyes and material? So in that case, the owner still has to pay him for the job, but he pays him the lesser amount. There are two different payments he can pay, either the increase in the wool's value or the cost of the dyes. So whichever one is less, that's what the wool owner has to pay. Now, what happens if he dyes it in a different color to what the owner specified? So contrary to Meir, he's basically stolen his thing because he's done something completely different to what he wanted, and therefore the dyer has to pay the owner the value of the wool. But contrary to Yehuda, he still improved the value of the wool, and he did a job, just not exactly what he wanted, and therefore the owner still has to pay the dyer for doing the job, but again he pays the lesser amount, either the cost of the dye or the increase in the value, whichever is less, that's what he needs to pay. The rest of Perek Tes discussed the laws which we apply to someone who steals something and then falsely swears that he didn't steal it, and then after that he admits that actually he did steal it. So he gets two punishments. Number one, he has to pay keren v'chomesh, which is the actual amount, the actual worth of the item which he stole, plus a fifth of its value, which we explained actually means a quarter, and as well as that he also has to bring a korban osham for making a false oath. Now all of this only applies implies if the thing that he stole is worth at least a shoya pruta, which is the smallest significant value of something, and if he does this, then he has to go, whereas usually the nigzel, which refers to the person who got stolen from, usually he has to come to the gazlan and ask for the money. But in this case, the nigzel's not going to do that, because the gazlan swear they didn't have it, and therefore the gazlan has to go after him and give it to him, and he can't give it to his messenger, to the nigzel's messenger, he has to give it to the nigzel himself. The gazlan can appoint a messenger in order to do that, but ultimately the gazlan or the gazlan's messenger has to give it to the nigzel himself. And if the nigzel dies, then he'll give it to his inheritors. Now, if he pays the nigzel the keren, or let's say the nigzel says, you know what, I don't mind, you don't need to pay them keren, but he still owes him the chomesh, which is the extra fifth. Aloch is, he doesn't have to go after the nigzel, he only has to pay him if the nigzel comes to him. Now, what happens if, let's say, he paid the keren, he didn't pay the chomesh, but he claimed, in fact, he swore that he paid the chomesh, and then he admits that actually he was lying. So now that chomesh becomes the keren. He's got to pay keren the chomesh, the value plus a fifth, for the original fifth. And this is the case unless it becomes less than a shoya pruta. If the fifth of the original amount is less than the shoya pruta, then these halachs don't apply, because anyway, these only apply if it's a significant value. The Mishnah then brought a case of a hatoin tanas ganav, which refers to a shomer chinom, which is someone who watches over something which belongs to someone else, and he's not paid for it. So if the owner of that item comes to him and says, hey, I accuse you of stealing my item, but this shomer chinom says, no, someone else stole it. The halach is, if someone steals the thing which the shomer chinom is looking after, the shomer chinom is exempt from paying for it. So he says that someone else stole it. However, later on, witnesses come along, and they testify that actually he was the one who stole it. The halach is, he's chayv to pay tashlumei chifel, which is double the value of the item, which is the halacha which a ganav gets, because that's exactly what he was trying to do to the other person. He was saying, oh, someone else stole it. Had that person been caught, he would have had to pay tashlumei chifel, and therefore, since we've now caught him, he needs to pay that tashlumei chifel. That's if witnesses come. If he confesses to having done it, then he only needs to pay for the actual amount of the item, because of the rule that moida b'knas potter. Again, moida b'knas potter, which means that if you confess to owing a fine, you're exempt from paying that fine. It's only if witnesses come, and therefore, if he admits, he does not need to pay tashlumei chifel, which is considered a fine. And what happens if you steal from your father? So someone steals from their father, and they swear falsely they didn't steal from him, and then the father dies, and then they actually admit that actually they did steal from him. So even though he should really inherit part of this keren v'chomesh, because he's one of the father's inheritors, the halacha is he has to give that whole keren v'chomesh to the other inheritors. The reason being that in order to get an atonement, he needs to return the entire value of the thing that he stole, and therefore it's irrelevant whether he's entitled to this money or not, because if he wants an atonement, he jolly well better give this to the other inheritors. And the Mishnah gave an interesting way out of this, a loophole, because if he can't afford to lose out on this inheritance, let's say he's literally penniless, so we want him to get his inheritance, and therefore he can borrow money from someone else, and that money he can use to pay the keren v'chomesh to the other inheritors, and then when the lender comes to collect the money, this person has the money, and therefore the lender will come and collect the money from the other inheritors, and therefore he won't lose out for having to pay for that. And then the Mishnah said the exact same applies to someone whose father makes a neder, which is a vow. He makes a neder that his son can't benefit from him, even after he specifies that even after he dies, his son can't benefit from his property, his inheritance, but the Chachomim want him to get his inheritance, and therefore we have this loophole. That in order to support himself, he can borrow money to support himself, and then when he has no money, the lender can come to him, and he has no money to pay back, and therefore the lender collects the money from the other inheritors. That's another loophole in order to allow him to get his inheritance. Okay, that's stealing from your father. What happens if someone steals from a convert? When a convert converts, it's considered as if he's reborn, and therefore all of his relatives are no longer considered relatives. So if he dies before getting married, that means he has no relatives. So if you steal from him and swear falsely and then he dies, and then you admit that actually you did steal from him, you can't pay his inheritors, because he has none. And therefore, who do you pay the keren v'chomesh to? You pay it to the Kohanim. Which Kohanim? You pay it specifically to the Kohanim who are working in the Beis HaMikdash during that week. When you arrive at the Beis HaMikdash, whoever's working then, they're known as the Anshe Mishmar, the Kohanim working in the Beis HaMikdash that week, you give it to them to keep, and of course you also bring the Korban Osham. Now what happens if they're about to give this Korban Osham and the money, but before they actually do so, the Gazlan dies. So surprisingly, the inheritors are exempt from paying the money, because really the Gazlan owns the money, because there are no inheritors. The reason why he has to give it to the Kohanim is to get an atonement. Once he's dead, an atonement won't help, and therefore the inheritors don't have to pay. However, the Korban is already designated to be a carbon, and therefore you can't just use it for yourself, so you have to wait until it develops a blemish and then redeem it onto money, and that money goes to the Beis HaMikdash to be spent on Beis HaMikdash needs, like bringing carbonos when there are no other carbonos being brought on the Mizbeach. And what happens if he's done half of it? The Gazlan gives the money, he hasn't yet brought the carbon, and then he dies. So obviously the carbon can't be bought because the owner of the carbon is no longer alive. But what about the money? Can the inheritors claim back the money since the carbon wasn't bought, so they like stopped halfway? The answer is no, because the Pasuk specifically says if you give something to the Kohen and the Kohen keeps it, and therefore the Kohanim get to keep the money. And finally, the Mishnah told us that the money has to be given to the Kohanim before the Korban is bought. Not just the Kohanim, in all these examples, the money has to be given before the Korban is bought, and therefore if you bring the Korban before the money, then you actually have to bring another Korban after you've bought the money, so that the money is always bought before the Korban. First half of Perek Yud continues to discuss the halachos of a gazlan, this thief who steals forcefully, and specifically whether one can benefit from a stolen item. And in short, the answer is no. But firstly, continuing from the discussion in the last parak, Mishnah told us that if a gazlan steals something and then dies, and the inheritors now have that, if that thing has undergone a change, which means that the gazlan would usually not pay the actual item, but he'd pay the value of the item back, the gazlan's inheritors are exempt from paying the value back, because they're very much removed from this stealing, and anyway, they're not giving back the actual item, and therefore they are exempt from paying back, as long as the nigzal, which again is the person who was stolen from, if he has had yush, which means he's given up hope of getting it back, if that is the case, then the inheritors will be exempt from paying back. However, if part of the inheritance which they got from their father, there was land serves as an achrayas nechosim, which means that if the nigzal comes to collect payment, and there's no money to pay him, he can collect it from land. And therefore, if they inherited land as well, then they would have to give the land to the nigzal as payment for the stealing which their father did. And when it comes to benefiting from stolen money, if there's a box or something with money which was collected from tax, very often that was done dishonestly, and therefore it was considered stealing, so you can't use that money to exchange with your money. Let's say you want change or something, you can't use that because that would be benefiting from stolen money. Similarly, you can't take charity from it. However, you could benefit and you could take charity from the tax collector's personal money, because we assume that they're not mixed, because the tax collector would be afraid to mix the money because the king might check up on him, and therefore we assume that his personal bank account, we'll call it, is considered separate from the dishonest money of the tax. Then we brought the case where a Jewish tax collector comes to someone's house and he takes your donkey, let's say, and instead of your donkey, he gives you someone else's donkey which he stole. Even though the thing he gave you is stolen, you can keep it because the owner of that donkey has pretty much definitely had yish, he's given up hope of getting it back. The reason being because it was a Jewish tax collector, which would mean they would go to a Jewish Beis Din. And the Beis Din, in order to force someone to give something back, you would require two witnesses to have witnessed the stealing. And because that's very difficult to have, the owner probably gave up hope of getting it back, and therefore you can keep this item. However, if the thief is not Jewish, and this would apply to any thief, then you can't keep it unless you actually find out that he has given up hope. But you can't necessarily assume that immediately, because non-Jewish courts do accept evidence, even if it's not from witnesses, and therefore it's easier to force the thief to give back the money, and therefore he doesn't give up hope, the owner doesn't give up hope of getting the money back, or getting the item back. Then we started discussing a beehive, which contains bees. So midoraisa, you can't acquire bees. But midrabbanan, you can, and therefore, if the bees fly to someone else's field, since midrabbanan, they belong to the other person, you can't keep them unless you find out that the owner has had yush. And even though a woman or child is usually an invalid witness, when it comes to this case, since it's only midrabbanan, if they say, and they're not even necessarily trying to give testimony, they just say that the bees came from this field, they're believed because it's a midrabbanan matter. And if the bees do fly out your field, you're allowed to trespass through someone else's field in order to retrieve them. But of course, if you do damage to the field, you'll have to pay for that. And if the bees are on a branch and you want to cut the branch off to take it back into your field, according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Reika, you can't, because that's much more damage and it's more permanent, so you can't just do that. But it would be Shmuel ben Noach Rabbi Yochanan ben Reika, his son, he says you're allowed to as long as you pay for the damage, and he explains that this is one of the conditions, one of the laws which were made when they entered Eretz Yisrael originally, and therefore it's allowed. If someone will call him Reuven, if something of Reuven's gets stolen and word gets out, so people know it's stolen, and then Reuven finds it in Shimon's possession, and witnesses testify that this was indeed Reuven's, but Shimon claims that he bought it from someone else, the halacha is if Shimon swears how much he paid for it, then Reuven can force him to sell it back to him for that amount. He can't just take it from him. This is known as takonas hashuk, so that people won't be afraid of buying things in case it's stolen and they won't be able to keep it. So only with all these conditions can Reuven take it back, and even then he'll have to buy it back. He can't just take it back. We then brought two examples where two people have something which they're about to lose. For example, a barrel of something which is spilling, or a donkey, donkeys which are being swept by the river. So if the owner of the thing which is less valuable abandons his in order to save yours, then you don't need to pay him for the loss of his animal, because he didn't make that condition. You just need to pay him for the service, as it were, for him doing that. But if you do make the condition, then of course you'll have to pay him for the loss of your animal, because that's the condition you made. Okay, that's what the mission discussed about benefiting, in terms of benefiting from a stolen item. For most of the rest of the Perek, Amsechta, the mission discussed returning a stolen item. And firstly, the mission told us that if you steal land and then it's taken by people, or it's damaged, it's maybe be flooded, if that would have happened even if the gazlan hadn't stolen it, then the gazlan is potter, because like we explained earlier, you can't acquire land just by stealing it, and therefore it always belonged to the owner, and since it would have happened anyway, the gazlan is exempt for paying for the damage, unless of course it happened because it was him in the field. In that case, he would have to pay for it. If someone steals something or borrows something, or he takes something to watch over on behalf of someone else, if he does it in an inhabited area, for example near the person's house, then he can't just return that thing to the owner when he's in the middle of the desert very far away. It's a big pay pain for him, it's a hassle for him to take it then, and therefore you have to give it back to him again in an inhabited area. However, if when you took it from him, the owner told you he was going to the desert, then that is enough to give him permission to give it back to him in the desert, even if it will be a hassle. The mission then discussed the concept, very important concept, known as Bori Vishema, Bori Odif, which means that if someone accuses someone else of stealing something from him, of borrowing something from him, or of taking something to watch over, but not giving it back. So if the person admits that he did steal it, or any of the other things, but he says he's not sure whether he gave it back, in that case we apply the rule of Bori Vishema, Bori Odif, which means if you've got a definite claim, in this case the person who's accusing him, he says, I definitely think that you stole it and you haven't given it back, versus a unsure claim, in this case the person who's accused says he's not sure if he gave it back. So the definite claim beats the non-definite claim, and therefore he'll have to give back the money, after paying for the thing which he stole. But if he says he's not even sure whether he stole it in the first place, then we apply a different rule known as Hamitz Mechavir Olav Haraya, very common rule, which means that if someone is trying to get money from someone else, then that person has to prove that he's entitled to that money. And since this person can't prove it, he just says, oh, I'm sure, that's not good enough, and therefore, unless he can bring a proof, the money will remain with the person who is accused of stealing it.